Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Phil Tyrone. Philip is the president of the Mortgage Equity Group and the author of 7 Steps to 720 Credit Score, produced by Nightingale Conant. Philip, welcome to our show.
Bruce, it's great to be here again.
Let's go back to a more positive time real briefly. When did you get in the business? About what year?
1997.
Oh, okay. Well, that was actually just the start of ramping up. My goodness. So for the first, I don't know, 9 to 10 years of your loan business life, you didn't see much negative.
No, I mean, you know, definitely. I mean, it was what we saw was the continuing of loosening the guidelines.
Yep.
You know, easier, and easier. And now we're just seeing the exact opposite.
The people that you worked with, were they making just really substantial incomes in 04 to 06?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I joke about it. I mean, we had people in our office literally driving Bentleys.
Okay.
I was driving a car with 75,000 miles on it, fortunately. I'm a saver. But literally, they're driving Bentleys, loan agents.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting to. Most of the people that you work with, did they end up financially fine with this great income, or did they happen to match their income with expenses and now they're not doing so good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, see, those individuals are out of the business now. I mean, they just, you know, they're jumping from one bandwagon to the other. They went from loan to loan modification. When the loan modification stopped, they're doing something else. I don't know, you know, but that's, yeah, they matched their income with their expenses and they went down with the boat.
I know where one of them or some of them went. I was at a trustee sale a couple of days ago and I was there and standing there instead of my son. And this one guy who is a regular there, he points at the steps. He says, former mortgage broker, mortgage broker, mortgage broker.
So somehow
they're at the courthouse steps with probably other people's money anyway.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the difference between a mortgage broker and a mortgage banker.
Mm-hmm.
Let's clarify that definition for people.
So let's clarify it the way it was and the way it is now.
Okay.
Because there's a key difference with the new regulation. So in the heyday 3 years ago, a mortgage banker is where you're going to you're going to a bank and they're lending their own money. And there's a few different ways you could define mortgage banker. Like if you go to Bank of America, that's a mortgage bank and they are lending their own money, absolutely, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a second tier of mortgage banking where, you know, it's a regional firm and they lend their own money, but it's through a warehouse line and then they immediately sell it.
Okay.
Okay, because Bank of America, the bank, Wells Fargo, Wash Mutual, they portfolioed many of those loans, especially the Neg-Am loans that they made.
Okay.
You know, those higher risk loans, and that's why these, you know, Washington Mutual went out of business instantly because that's what, or World Savings, Wachovia, because of those negative amortizing high risk loans.
Okay, and there wasn't a market to get rid of that?
Yeah, well, in some cases there were, but not always. I mean, Washington Mutual, Wachovia, I mean, they specifically came to us lenders and, you know, they said, okay, no, we will hold this on our books. And because it was an adjustable and because it was tied to the cost of funds or the MTA or something, you know, they just felt comfortable with that. They didn't realize when the change in the market, how the reserve requirements would change significantly, which ultimately pushed them to bankruptcy.
Okay.
So anyways, you have the mortgage bank, you have the mortgage bankers, the regional bankers, and then you had the brokers. And the brokers were individuals that could go to any bank and take that loan because the banks had two, the banks like the Bank of America's and the Wells Fargo's and the Wachovia's, they had two divisions. They had a retail division wherein the people walked in off the street.
Okay.
And then they had a wholesale division where they came to individuals like lenders and said, hey, we will sell you this loan. If you bring it to us, we will sell you the rate at a lower rate, and we'll give you the difference between our retail and our wholesale, and you make that spread, which is 1-1.5%, whatever it is, to that loan agent.
Okay.
So that's the key difference back then. Now, with all the changes in our lending world, that's not the case anymore. And the reason why is because, you know, 99% of loans being done right now are going to the government, Fannie and Freddie.
So they're the mortgage-backed security outlet, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Where 3 years ago, these lenders would sell to Wall Street. Now they're selling it, to Fannie and Freddie. And because of that, and because of increased weight regulations, which we'll talk shortly about, there's not as much of a difference in the mortgage broker that can shop to three or four different banks versus the mortgage banker or the mortgage bank, because rates are rates primarily. I mean, I say that, I underline the word primarily, or put that in quotes, with Fannie and Freddie. Rates are rates. Fees are basically fees. And the key to choosing a lender, as I said to a guy yesterday, it's really choosing someone you feel comfortable to work with, you know that they will deliver, rather than trying to save the $100 or $200.
Okay.
That's going to be different, because there's not that real difference like there was, where you could save thousands of dollars by going to the right lender and shopping.
Okay, so the choices are really minimalized at this point.
Yeah, it's minimalized because, we're all selling the same product.
Okay.
Like, for the most part, it's 99% Fannie Mae, and it's 95% 30-year fixed.
Okay, now let's just talk the size of loan Fannie Mae does ends at 7 and change, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, how is the loan business handled above that?
It's on a case by case basis with a few regional banks. Obviously Fannie and Freddie. You can't go to them.
Right.
You got to go to the private banking arms of the Wells Fargos and the Bank of Americas and the small banks like Union Bank and City National, and it's these smaller hub banks. That's where a lender does have more of that's where the value of a loan broker or a loan officer comes in for those higher priced properties, because we know where to go. That being said, Bruce, I want to make it very clear. I mean, those loans have dried up, and I'm just trying to give you an example on how much they've dried up. I mean, the amount of financing being done over 729 has got to be down 80 or 90%. I mean, it is significant, and the reason why is because of the guidelines. I mean, before we could do these stated income loans, and stated income loans, when I say that, everyone's like, I can't believe banks would ever do stated income loans.
Mm-hmm.
But there were certain cases where stated income loans may not have been a bad idea. For example, a gentleman has a company, and he puts all his expenses through the company, and he has $5 million in the bank, and he wants to buy a $3 million property and put 30% down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily that bad of an idea. I mean, it's not like a big, big risk, but it's reverted to the point where that guy can't get a loan. I mean, I read an article the other day where it was talking about a guy with $8 million in the bank can't get a financing.
Well,
yeah.
Now, stated income didn't always mean no proof, though. I mean, when you said stated income, didn't there have to be some kind of, at some point there was some kind of proof of at least deposits made in an account, or was it always just, we'll take your word for it?
Oh, no. It got progressively worse.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, when I first got in the business, stated income was, bank statements.
Okay.
And then stated income, certain lenders said stated income is the first page of the 1040 only, so you don't look at the Schedule C, or you don't look at the corporate returns. I mean, but then little by little it got to the point where, stated income is no doc, meaning just put your name and your Social Security number, you have a credit score over 720, and you're done.
Just to mention, I counted the foreclosures that are coming in the next 30 days, the next 30 days of trustee sales for $1 million plus loans. There's over 1,000 of them in Southern California in the next 30 days.
Oh, my God.
So that maybe there's not enough people to buy those houses at that price. And see, that's what's interesting. That loan category is going to have a big problem because it's not easy to refi that kind of loan either then.
Oh, no, no way. I mean, and not to mention the fact of how underwater many of them are, not to mention the fact that with the new appraisal, appraisal guidelines, the appraisals are all over the place. And I'll give you an example. I did a home refinance for this guy. He bought it from, I did the loan, I think it was 5-6 years ago when he bought it for $800,000. It may have been $850, but right around there. So he came to me to do a refinance, and I said, "Sure, here you go." And we ordered the appraisal, and the appraisal came in. So it went up from $850 to whatever it went up to, $1.7 million, whatever.
Okay.
Right? So then we did an appraisal, and the first appraisal came back at like $850,000. And you know, when you tell your borrower that, they're like, "Are you kidding me? There's no way it's gone down this much." I said, "Hey, it really doesn't matter. You don't need to worry about it. Let's not even pay attention to that." And he said, "Okay." Well, what he ended up dragging his feet. He went out of town for 3 months, and he said, "I don't want to do." He's like, "You know, I'll do the refinance when we get back." Well, because the appraisal was 3 months old, we had to order another appraisal. We went through the same exact process we went through the first time, and this appraisal came back at $1.170 million.
Wow.
I'm like, "You got to be kidding me." I mean, and I just have two appraisals here looking at it. I'm like, the same exact process, and this is what's happening with the this is why your investors and the people who follow you are pulling their hair out with their lenders and these and the appraisal guidelines and the appraisal system we have in place, because it makes no sense. We're bringing in appraisers from all over the place, and this appraisal management company is just this middleman that is giving a seemingly, putting a seemingly Chinese wall between the lenders and the mortgage guys.
Right.
But the reality is, Bruce, the guys that were defrauding the banks, the lenders that were defrauding the banks are not in the business anymore.
Right.
Like, these are the guys who are now wherever they are, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, defrauding everybody. I mean, guys like me, I would ask an appraiser, "Hey, what's this worth?" You know, I would never say, "Hey, you know, I'm going to pay you to have it come $100,000 over what it should be." I mean, I would never do that.
Right.
But
well, that's the thing. There's a correction after the fact. That's a lot of that's going on to where, we started talking off air a little bit about Reg X.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about the new regulations that are starting to affect the business. And are there different levels of regulation, federal and state, that also sometimes just make it much more difficult than it would have had to been?
Well, I mean, the short answer is the regulation in the loan industry is so overdone right now, and that it's literally causing 2 to 3 times the work. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that.
Okay.
Okay. It's literally 2 to 3 times the work. Matter of fact, you know, Aaron called me the other day and says, "Do you have to send out good faith estimates every time you do, you know, you bring in somebody's paperwork and do a pre-approval?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Okay. I mean, the Regulation X basically states that we need to give a good faith estimate that is so precise that if we are off, for example, if I say the escrow fee is going to be $600,
right?
Okay, and the escrow fee comes in at $800, I have to eat that.
Okay.
As a lender.
Okay.
Now, I mean,
it's not even your fee to.
It's not even my exactly. It's not my fee, and but what it does is it causes all of a sudden. I'm hearing it in the industry how, you know, the last thing we want to do is have to pay an appraisal fee because our escrow fee because our escrow person, you know, communicated incorrectly. So what's happening is all this over disclosing. And I'm hearing it from people saying, you know, well, why are the fees so expensive? And it's really, it's just, hey, we're just, this is the worst case scenario. And then not to mention the fact of, you know, with Regulation X, anytime there's a change, new set of regulations need to go out, which just slow down the process.
Okay.
So, for example, we submit a loan. This happened to me, you know, a month ago. We submitted a loan it was a big loan. It was, this guy was buying a $2.5 million property, and he wanted a 5-year fixed. We submit on a 5-year fixed. He changed it to a 3-year fixed. Well, guess what? Everything stops.
Okay.
Everything stops. Okay, great. So the underwriter can't underwrite it. We need to send out regulations. I mean, you got to wait 3 days. If we email them, if we put them in the mail, we have to wait longer. And anyways, my point is that once again, it's an exaggeration of regulations that were written by people who don't understand the process. And here's where it's going to affect your investors. So for those listening, here's what's going to affect you. If you're selling a property, and you're saying, because I get a lot of people calling us and saying, hey, can you close a loan in 14 days?
Mm-hmm.
Good luck. Like, not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. 30 days is an absolute pedal to the metal push because of Regulation X.
All right. Refis or purchases, which loans dominate right now, refis or purchases?
I would say... I would say in my life, I would say about 50-50.
Okay.
But I have a lot of, people who are doing, significantly more refinances because of the rates.
Okay.
But I just, because I'm in West Los Angeles, I just don't have that luxury of doing as much, of the lower end like I wish I could.
Okay.
Because it's just not my market.
We had talked about the percentage of people who walked into your office in 05 and 06 that were able to get loans, and that was a real high percentage, but for the audience sake, what percentage?
Yeah, it was like 80%, 85%.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
And how did that ratio change in 2009?
Oh, 15, maybe.
And these people didn't, what happened to their, in their life that made them now not qualify? Was it what happened to them, or just the way the lending world has changed makes it impossible?
I think it's a combination of both.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we do have the people that had their income has been affected. We have the people where their savings has been affected, so they can't put as big of a down payment on. But for the most part, for the majority of the cases, it's the lending guidelines, and the lending guidelines are getting worse. I mean, let me give you an example.
Okay.
With Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, this is the government financing, where obviously Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And anytime we submitted it through automated underwriting,
right,
we could, if we got an approve, an accept plus, where the computer came back and said, these guys are golden, we could have ratios at 50, 60%. I mean, I've seen them, 60, 65, 68% back in ratios. And that's back in ratios where we take all their expenses and divide it by their income, right? So it's a 65% back in ratio.
Right.
Well, they just came out, just recently, and they said, no back in ratios over 45%.
Okay.
So it's just another, now, this may occur to the listener as, that's not a big deal. Well, from a lender's perspective, that's a big deal. Because that's a segment of the population that could get financing. They're putting a nice down payment down, or they have money in the bank, or whatever their reasoning is. Statistically speaking, the computer said these people have a low default risk. But we can't get financing for them anymore. I mean, that's significant. It's all these little regulations that add up to something big.
Well, that also would prevent a lot of refis.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you've got a lot of people that have debt that exceed their mortgage payment. So you've got somebody coming in thinking they were going to be able to have all that debt and still get a refi. That now stands in the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, literally, this is how it works. Someone buys a car.
Yeah.
And then they can't get a loan. And they can't, no, I mean, that's what's happening right now. They're buying a car, and I'm not talking like a Bentley. I'm not talking like a high-end BMW, they go buy a Toyota Corolla, and it can put them over. I mean, if it's 1%, if it's 0.1 over 45%, you can't get the loan.
Okay.
So anyways, I don't need to belabor that, but you understand where I'm coming from.
Well, and, you know, when people think, okay, well, 60% to 45 is not that big a deal. Well, percentage-wise, it's huge.
Yeah, it is a significant factor of people who, and here's the thing, Bruce, this is for the people that are buying our rehabbed homes.
Yes.
I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, so you have a property on the market, and you have a great borrower, and they don't understand, you know, certain things, and they re-up their lease, and their lease goes up by $42, and that impacts their ability to get a home.
You probably have a sit-down with people saying, don't buy anything during 30 days.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I say, don't do anything. Don't put any money in your credit card. Don't do anything. Even things you would think help, like, you know, we've talked about before, you pay off a collection account, that hurts your credit score.
Because
in many times. Yeah. It can. I mean, if the collection's older than 24 months, it actually hurts your credit score. I'm like, hey, whatever you think you're going to do, just call me ahead of time.
Yeah, that's we'll talk a little bit about the credit world in the next segment. Fortunately, we get to have you two times. I wanted to ask you, jumbo loans interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
How are they different from the Fannie Mae limits?
Well, from a loan size, obviously anything is over 7.29.
Okay.
That's what the loan amount is, and then from an interest rate perspective, the money out there. I mean, anyone who's doing a jumbo loan or anything over 7.29, they're not getting 30-year fixed money because it's unreasonably priced. I mean, it's high sixes, low sevens. So what they're doing is they're going to these regional banks, like I mentioned to you, these regional banking firms,
right?
And they're getting like a 5-year fix, 10-year fix, and like a 5-year fix, you're talking, you know, low fives or mid fives, and a 10-year fix, you're talking high fives, low sixes.
And then it adjusts to whatever the market is?
Exactly.
Wow. That's a little scary.
Yeah.
We've got just a couple more minutes. I don't want to forget. Phil, what's your contact information and a website?
You can reach me at philiptyrone.com, philiptyrone.com. Or our phone number is 310-453-1901, and you can ask for myself, my partner Beth, and Tilla, and we handle any type of mortgages, FHA up to super jumbos, all over California.
Okay.
Thank you, Bruce.
Sure. In our last 2 minutes, let's talk about reserve requirements. You had just mentioned that briefly. Is that changed in the last few years for banks?
Oh, well, I mean, it all depends on where it's changed is in the jumbos significantly.
Okay.
Where, you know, the jumbos, I mean, you know, you, I mean, you could get, I mean, I closed $3 million loans with, you know, 2 months PITI.
Okay.
I mean, that's what a significant change it is. And now we're talking, you know, depending on the bank, 6 months income or 12 months payments. I mean, it just depends. And the reserve requirements, that's not as black and white in most cases as you know, back-end ratios are, things like that, or credit score. Because that's just black and white, where reserve requirements, it just depends. You know, where is the money? Is it in retirement? Is it, you know, is it liquid? And that's stuff we can finesse with the lender.
Okay. You know, I think we probably would agree we went way too far on the generous side, and now the backlash is we're having to cope with this segment where we're going too far on the conservative side. And at some point, we'll probably end up with a safe loan, but back in the middle.
Yeah.
All right. Phil, thanks for joining us, and we'll pick up this discussion on our next segment.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.